Thinking omnipresents means lots of gifts at Christmas. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
Well, we're back for our first show in 2011. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Tim the Tool is working the board, trying out some new material. How's that working for you, Tim?
You're a neat guy, too, Drew.
Been out of here for about a month, so it does take a while to get the head back into the swing of things, but thank you for your patience, people, with Tim. I've thoroughly enjoyed every aspect of today's show. There's not one component that I have not enjoyed.
Other than me.
You said it, not me.
Okay.
Coming up next, Michael Korn, broadcaster, author, and columnist, and he's going to straighten me out in how I think about my experience in the Middle East. My experience in Israel, I guess it wasn't really all of the Middle East, although I did slip over to Jordan there for a little bit.
Did you?
Yeah.
Just swam across the border?
No, but I was looking at the Red Sea. So many seas to get confused with over there. And with Moses going across it.
Yeah.
I sure hope he took one of them little skinny tips up at the top, because that's a big sea down as you get lower. And a lot of shark attacks at down near Egypt.
Sharm el-Sheikh is where my mom and dad went scuba diving a couple years ago, and when they heard that news, it was like,
A German tourist or snorkeler or something? I don't know. Anyway. Up next, a guy I like, which, as I get older, is more rare than ever. Frank Schaefer, author, Huffington Post blogger, uncertain believer. A good friend, Frank Schaefer, is back, folks, for our first show of the new year. I don't know whether you realize this, but Frank has a problem with fundamentalist Christians, but he also has a problem with new atheists. He's got a problem with everybody. And despite the obvious differences in their ideology, it's the same problem. Mindsets that leave no room for questions and even less room for tolerance. In the fairly newly released paperback edition of Patience with God, a great read. I've got to recommend this to everybody. A great read. Frank offers a middle ground for those who find right-wing evangelists as distasteful as the uber-liberal lefties who mock them. I love that sentence. Frank is one of the very few authors out there who I actually can relate to spiritually, because we both have this on-again, off-again relationship with God. It is a bizarre phenomena, to say the least. Please welcome my American twin, Frank Schaefer. How are you doing, Frank?
Hey, it's good to be with you, and thanks for putting me up front in the beginning of the new year.
Yeah, well, listen, I had to get somebody who has the same messy spirituality journey that I do. I had a tough go there, and actually, my mistake, I got to apologize to you on air. We were supposed to get you on before I went over to Israel for a month, and the schedule just went weird, and we lost you. So I want to thank you for being willing to come back in the new year.
Hey,
thanks.
You know, if you're going to miss a guest by a day, at least go to Israel or go to Mars or do something else dramatic. You know, it's better than saying, hey, I just got up late this morning and forgot about you.
I went
to Israel. I couldn't talk to you.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. I was
out there.
Yeah. You know, how much therapy did it take to shake that reputation of being part of the family that founded the religious right?
Well, you know, no amount ever shakes the background, in the sense that, like everybody else, you're a creature of how you were raised and your parents and a little bit of genetics and your own choice. And, you know, early in life, I kind of thought, oh, how do I distinguish myself from that background? What do I really believe as opposed to what my parents told me? I'm 58 now. I have 4 grandchildren, and I've given up on trying to figure out questions like that.
Right.
Basically, it's like trying to figure out your motivations. Why am I doing this? Am I trying to earn a living through it? You know, I've sort of given up on answering that. So what I've done instead is write some books like Patience with God and some other things that really are a way to put on the page as a writer these struggles. And I think it resonates with other folks who find that they struggle too with issues of belief, and what do I really believe, and what was I handed by my parents, or how was I brainwashed, what's my faith, what's an inherited viewpoint. I think we all go through this, and essentially I think it's better just to recognize that we're each a mixture of influences, and that choice is one factor. But hey, look, geography has a lot to do with faith too. You've just been in the Middle East. If you had been born into an Orthodox Jewish family living in a settlement in East Jerusalem, you'd be a different person than you are today. You know, there's a lot less choice in belief than there is geography, and I think that's tough to admit, but that's the truth. And I just happen to be Francis and Edith Schaefer's son, born in this mission of Le Brie in Switzerland, raised in a fundamentalist environment. My parents became leading figures in the American religious right in the 70s and the 80s. I followed in their footsteps for a while, got out, made a different series of choices, but I think a lot of that has to do with just, you know, who you are, where you're born, and at this stage of my life, a relationship with God comes much more clearly into my own life through my relationship with other people. For instance, my grandchildren and the love I feel for them and the love they offer me. And that's where I start to see some truth in my life rather than big highfalutin ideas or theology or the last thing that I read or wrote or whatever.
You know, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on back in December was because, and I think this was explained to you, I was going through a bit of a crisis of faith and am still in it. But as I've come back from being in Israel for a month, resigned myself to the fact that I will not be discussing my personal spiritual beliefs publicly until
right.
such time that God decides to show up.
Right.
And it's just, I don't know, I aired my dirty laundry for 4 months, and I've just, he said, all right, we're going to pull it in, the clothesline is empty, and people have been asking me, and I've just had this wall up. So I wish we could kind of turn the clock back, because there's so many things I'd like to divulge to you, because I think you're as screwy as I am.
Yes, well, I'm not sure that I take that as a compliment, but hey, you know, it takes one to know one. You know, hey, look, there's a better word than screwy, though, in all seriousness for a minute. Conflicted.
Yeah.
I think, is the only intelligent mode of being in life. The difference between me now at 58 and me when I was a fiery young man on the religious right is that I spend a lot of time being conflicted all about a lot of things. And I think that's experience. That's wisdom. Nothing is as simple as it's cracked up to be. There are two sides to just about every question. And when you really understand that in your gut,
yeah.
as opposed to theoretically, everything that looked so easy before becomes more complex, and you realize that being conflicted about all kinds of moral issues, certainly about theology, certainly the huge cosmological truth issues about the existence of God, is, I think, the better part of wisdom. And that's in this book, Patience with God. The subtitle is Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. Well, the discovery I make in that book, which is certainly not original, is simply this, and that is that ambiguity and conflict and nuance and paradox, these are words that I think we really all live by. People pretend they're certain there is no God. People pretend they're certain Jesus died for their sins. Inside, deep inside, the part we rarely admit, we are all conflicted about these issues. Just like if you've been married a long time, like I have, going on 40 years now, some days you're conflicted about whether you really love your wife or not. You had a big fight, you want to walk out. You wish you had a younger woman in bed with you sometimes, whatever it may be.
Yep.
If you tell the truth about the state that we all live in, conflicted is where we all are. And most people who act certain, it's just that. They are acting certain. It's a dishonest way of being.
Okay, so Daniel Taylor, he wrote this book, The Myth of Certainty. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Right.
He and I have had numerous conversations over the last few years. And when I've come to the conclusion, I have to allow myself to rest in the fact that those who are certain drive me nuts.
Right.
And yet I don't want to slip into this air of arrogance, you know, thinking, well, I've lived more life than they have, or I'm a little sharper in the, I realize there's three sides to every story. You know, it's sort of an elitist look down upon them, almost, you know, uber liberal attitude, dare I say that, to the Obama worshiper you are.
Right, right. But you know what? I think that's because you and I can maybe live on a split level. Look, there are things you have to be certain about. There are things that you act certain about because that's your obligation as a parent or whatever it may be, a
right.
teacher. But in your own head, you have mental reservations. But look, in the very biggest context, okay, if you and me are stuck on a desert island together and we got to get to the fundamental issue here, the fundamental issue is this. Life is too short to know anything with the kind of a certainty where you say, I'm going to kill somebody who disagrees with me.
Hmm.
Life is too short to blow up a mosque or an abortion clinic or a church and scream God is great. You know, nobody ever burnt down a building or blew up a clinic or blew up a mosque after yelling, I could be wrong. Okay, I might be wrong. So I'd rather live in a world with people who maybe are a little bit uncertain about things but don't kill you when they disagree. Because, look, if you allow for the possibility that you could be wrong, even if it's a small possibility about just about every issue, it actually throws you back into what I regard as the prime virtue of genuine Christian and religious teaching, and that is humility. Because in the bottom line, the most dangerous thing is an arrogance which writes off other people and their positions.
Yeah.
And this is where, for instance, in Patience with God, I go after new atheists like Hitchens and Dawkins and these other guys, because I find their position as arrogant in its dismissal of all religion as ridiculous and damaging, as I do the religious rights position that if you're gay, you're going to hell, or that you could choose to be straight, or if you are a Roman Catholic, your theology's wrong, say from my Reform background, whatever it may be. And so I think they're really just two sides of the same coin, and that is people looking for big, certain answers about cosmological questions that we can know nothing about. That doesn't mean we can't hope. Hmm. That doesn't mean we can't look at the life and teaching of Jesus Christ and others as well and see truth and beauty, just like we can listen to a symphony, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, and when all those big choral numbers kick in, even though I know the thing backward, I still get tears in my eyes because it's so beautiful. It speaks to my soul. I'm not a musicologist. I could be wrong. I don't understand the music in an academic sense, but it speaks to me. And I think if you approach things that way, you come off much better in the end and are a much more compassionate kind of person than if you got this sort of fist in your face absolutism about everything.
Very well said. On the line with Frank Schaefer. Frank, I was chatting with Paul Young about my crisis of faith stuff, and he said something similar to this. If you find yourself unable to worship God, then worship love.
Right.
Because, you know, if God is love, inevitably you might find yourself worshiping God. I guess ultimately that's the point. But you're never going to go wrong worshiping love. Is that just too esoteric and kind of incense-burning hippie stuff, or is that, do you dig that?
Hey, you know, the hippies weren't all bad. I married one, okay? And we're still together.
Right, okay.
So, you know, let's not punch the hippies.
All right.
Hey, but let me just say this. I think, yes, worship love, that would be one way to put it. But the other way I'd put it is this. In my evangelical fundamentalist background of American Christianity, though I was raised in a mission in Switzerland, the Brie, by my parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, we were nevertheless American fundamentalists and rather typical. Looking back on that, we talked about God a lot, but actually what we were worshiping was the Bible, the book. It was an inerrant talisman to us. If you worship God, rather than trying to worship a book about God or worship theology about God, if you worship God in the sense of saying, look, we can't describe God's character, we don't know anything about this, but we see a manifestation of beauty and spirituality in the world around us, then it gets you away from the idea of thinking that salvation or a good life or how to treat people is predicated on both book learning or correct answers to tests, and rather it's actually the content of your character, which is much harder to do. And so I would put it slightly differently. I think worshiping love is a good way to put it. I think another way to put it is to say, look, actually try to worship what you feel is the voice of God in and around you in the universe, whether it's in music or art or the love of a grandchild as they look into your eyes with complete trust and adoration, and it scares the hell out of you because you know they're going to be depending on you and you know who you are, which is a big problem of learning how to be a parent and then a grandparent. I mean, you know, they're looking at you as a grown-up, and you knew you never did grow up, and you're in worse shape now than they are. They just don't know
they
that.
Don't
but
know
you
it,
play
don't
the role. Yeah. But, you know, but I think the bottom line is you feel God's presence or you don't, but when I feel God's presence, it's certainly not in correct theology and parsing, you know, creeds. It's in the actual experience of life, and I think that's where theology leads us astray, and if you want to find God in your life, you're not going to find him in books about God.
You know, a little birdie told me that Frank Schaefer thinks that Obama can do no wrong.
That's not true.
Come on.
I just think he's a good president, which is better than a lot of other things. I mean, I don't think any politician can do no wrong, and I don't think any politician's entirely bad, you know, with a few exceptions, like maybe Pol Pot and Hitler and Mao Zedong. But seriously, I think Barack Obama is a good president. I think he's intelligent, he's compassionate, he's decent. There's things that if I was president, you know, you would do differently in style or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, you know, speaking as an American citizen of this part of North America, not confusing it with all of North America the way some of my compatriots do.
Yes.
I think we're lucky. I think we have a good president, and I fault both the left and the right for their harsh and shrill criticism of this president. And here's a guy who basically arrived first day in the Oval Office with two wars, a failing economy, a national deficit, loss of trust, hatred of most of the globe for my country. And I look back over the last 2 years, and I think in spite of all that, he's done some good, which is incredible given the odds. So, you know, I wish him well. I root for him. I'm viciously critical in places like the Huffington Post of the left that are so snarky and want him to have done everything yesterday and say he sold out this or didn't do that. And I'm viciously critical of the right who, you know, have gone nuts on him from the beginning because they just can't take the idea we have a black American president. And whatever else they're saying, that's their real issue.
How do you, Mrs. Huffington, get along?
I've never met. The closest I got is we were both on a TV show, and she was in some studio somewhere as a talking head, and I was in another one. She invited me to blog from just about day one when they started, however many years ago it is, and, you know, we've never met, probably never will. I don't know if she actually exists. I think she may just be on TV and then on page, because I've never seen her.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, look, you've got to check out this gentleman's stuff. For lack of a better word, Frank Schaefer. I want to just, this is a bit tedious, but I want to give people a snapshot of your blogs, your posts here. And Obama's critics owe him a New Year's fact-based apology. New start in DADT. Obama wins again. Critics lose again. The meaning of Christmas, by the way, that was very well done. Republicans and Christians versus gays. The New York Times Danish cartoons versus WikiLeaks. Jews for Jesus, or something like that. I love that one. God on our side, Christian Zionism exposed. End times, election results reflect biblical Republican paranoia. The stink of right-wing moral failure is about to overcome America. Was Jesus wrong? Obama's critics are dead wrong. I mean, you're all over the... No mosques, the real Republican race issue.
Right.
You don't mind stepping in it.
Well, look. I did some damage back in the day. I mean, I was part of something I feel that I was very wrong in being part of.
So you're trying to undo it.
Yeah, I have an excuse. I was a young kid raised in a nepotistic culture, kind of like North Korea, you know, where evangelical organizations, sons follow fathers, and that's the way it's done, whether it's Billy Graham or Schuller or any of these other big figures that you've seen. But as soon as I got a little older and knew better, I beat a hasty retreat and made a new life as a writer and novelist, writing books like Portofino and Zermatt, Saving Grandma, and all that for people who, you know, read real books, weren't reading my books because I claimed I could save them through my words or something, but made a living as a writer. But then I've written these nonfiction books like Patience with God and Crazy for God that are somewhat biographical, and really through them have tried to say, look, you know, we got it wrong. And we've led to a lot of real damage. And I'll just give you one concrete example. There are 5,000 dead American servicemen and women today because we went to war in Iraq, led by a president who was elected twice because his evangelical base agreed with his pro-life and other culture war issues, and for that reason alone. And that's why he was in power, a mediocre man with a minimal intelligence, misled by his own pietistic theology on one hand and kind of a hubris and American exceptionalism on the other, and he wound up killing people. So the effect of bad leadership that comes from bad theology or mixing theology with politics, even if it's not bad theology, has been deadly in this country. And back in the 70s, the Schaefer family played a leading role in creating this environment. And so I feel as a writer, look, I write about other themes. I write books like Keeping Faith about my son who was in the Marine Corps. I write books about fiction, novels like Portofino. I write works of humor. I do some blogging. But I've written a couple of serious memoirs, serious and humorous, I hope, too, that, like Patience with God, this new paperback, that really look, I hope, as honestly as I can at these issues. And then, of course, in the blogs, you know, that form of communication, if you want to call it that, you can just take your gloves off and say what you think. I mean, you got no editor telling you to be moderate or cautious. And so, you know, your nasty side can come out. And so that's therapeutic, too. I don't fight with my wife as much anymore because I used to fight with her a lot and I take out things on her. Now I take it out on the HuffPost readers.
Right, right. On those lefties, I tell you. Well, listen, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. We've got to expose our listeners to you more often. FrankSchaefer.com is the website, and a lot of good stuff in the Huffington Post. But real quickly, in about two sentences, let me ask you this, see if you can answer this in about two sentences. Do you think the states will ever stop sucking up to the Jews?
Well, I think Christian Zionism has so deformed our public policy that we're going to be at war for the next 1,000 years unless we rethink our relationship to the Middle East from a sensible point of view that doesn't have to do with loyalty to Bronze Age myths in the Old Testament.
Wow. Frank Schaefer, always a pleasure. Great to chat with you, mate.
Hey, anytime. Give me a call whenever.
Thanks, mate. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. There's a guy I always enjoy chatting with. This is about his third or fourth time on the show. And, you know, we're going to go from that to a gentleman I wanted to have on the show for quite a while now. And it's taken this long to get around to the one and only Michael Koren. As soon as I knew I was going to Israel for a month, I thought, when I get back, there's only one guy I want to debrief with about this, and it's Michael Koren.
Oh.
No, it wasn't you.
Oh, okay.
You okay? You all
That's
right
what
with
I
that?
Thought the start of the show
yeah,
was
Yeah, not at all there, champ. All right. Michael Koren, broadcaster, author, columnist, and one of the sharpest tools in the shed, up next on the Drew Marshall Show. Stay with us.
Kidnap all the children, put them in a foreign system, bring them up in no man's land where no one really wants them. It's a story.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca. Maybe you've been thinking about advertising your organization on the radio, but don't really have the budget for a long-term marketing campaign? Well, what if we gave you a show? The Drew Marshall Show is currently offering an innovative advertising concept for the small business owner or charity. With web stats and listenership at an all-time high, Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is offering you an opportunity to partner with us, one show at a time. Consider sponsoring one show and we'll introduce you to our listening audience for the day. Drew will mention your organization every hour during our four-hour show, including a live phone interview. We'll also post your logo and website link on our website for an entire month. If you're thinking about promoting a special event, product, or upcoming sale, or if you just want to test the radio advertising waters without a huge investment, then consider becoming a one-day advertising partner with The Drew Marshall Show. Go to drewmarshall.ca for details or call Joy 1250 on 905-845-2821, extension 367. That's 905-845-2821, extension 367.